Ken, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks for having me, Corinne.
First, congratulations on your win to the seat of Rensselaer County Legislature.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was my first ever citywide race. It's certainly a different style of campaign than just running in a city council district. Got to see lots of parts of Troy that I hadn't explored before. And I'm thrilled that it worked out.
What's your favorite new restaurant?
You know, it's funny. I came across a Chinese food restaurant up in the Berg that I had never visited before, and they were just super nice. And so now they're on my list.
Is it Spring Garden right across from the Stewarts?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
They are wonderful people, and yeah, they were really good.
Yeah, and we just had a nice conversation about even things as basic as street lighting and accidents, you know, at their intersection. And, you know, so it was a conversation about, you know, city dealings, but also about food. So it was good.
So at this time of the year, everybody is doing looks back, looks to the future. So I want to ask you, as you leave Troy's city council, what are you, I guess, proud of, happy about? And then I'd like to know what you're disappointed about and what you're worried about for the future.
Well, certainly from my own tenure on the council, and I say tenure, and it's also 10 years. So my tenure was 10 years. I'm definitely happy about some of the legislation that I've passed over the years. Most importantly, the landlord registry, which was one of the first pieces of legislation that I passed when I got on the council, because it was something that resident after resident was talking to me about, how negligent absentee landlords were allowing some of our neighborhoods to degrade. And we wanted to start holding landlords more accountable for their properties. That legislation, I did a lot of research into it. I met with CADARPO, which is the Capital District Association of Rental Property Owners. And we wanted to, we didn't want it to be an us versus them piece of legislation. We wanted to bring in landlords, because most landlords are good landlords and they're attentive to their properties and their tenants. But we wanted to let them know that we were going to go after bad landlords. And I could tell you that when I rejoined the council in 2020, some of the folks on code enforcement were the same people that were there when I during my previous 8 years on the council. And, you know, they were still saying to me, Ken, we still use this landlord registry on a daily basis. It's a powerful tool in our arsenal. We want you to even go further with this, move forward with residential occupancy permits. And that's, you know, if you talk about one of my regrets, is that we still have not been able to implement that in the city of Troy, the ROP program, which would be basically regular inspections on non-owner occupied properties. And we tried that back in, I think it was 2014, and it met a lot of resistance. We also felt that we didn't have enough staff in the city, and there's enough staff in the code enforcement department in order to implement that. But it's something that I still want to push for. And even though I'm leaving the city council, I'm still going to be a city representative. It's just that I'm going to be on the county legislature, but I'm still going to continue to push for that, because that would be the second phase of the landlord registry. You know, I guess another wonderful moment for me was back in 2011, when New York State passed marriage equality, and one of our own local state senators, which was Senator Roy McDonald, was considered a key Republican vote on that legislation. And I put forth a resolution from the city council in support of marriage equality, and of course urging our state senators to support that. And that was at the same time that I think it was Matt Baumgartner put up a billboard on I-787 that said, you know, Senator McDonald, please support marriage equality. You know, there was just a lot of pressure on him, and he ended up voting for it. He was one of those, I think it was four key Republican votes that allowed that legislation to pass. And of course that affected, not only myself and my husband, but thousands of same-sex couples throughout New York State. That was just a wonderful moment. It was very personal for me. It was a great moment of bipartisanship, where Republicans and Democrats on the council all came together to support the cause. So there were definitely some wonderful moments.
What concerns you about going forward now that you're leaving the council?
Well, I guess there's one obvious issue, is that the council is going to flip from Democratic control to Republican control on January 1st. And I'm sure we can talk about that. That's a concern of mine, only because I think, as a Democratic majority, I'm not going to say we're definitely not a rubber stamp for the mayor. He'd be the first to tell you that. We've certainly butt heads with him over the past couple of years, but we also are in line with Mayor Madden's agenda overall. And I feel like the Republican majority may not be in line with his agenda. For example, you know, pay as you throw. I know it's a contentious issue. It probably should not be. It's a program that makes a lot of sense to reduce the garbage that we throw into the waste stream, and to increase recycling is a good thing for the city. It gets costs down, tipping fees, whether you look at it from an environmental perspective or from an economic perspective. It's a smart thing to do, but it's been politicized, unfortunately. And
I think the messaging is problematic too. I mean, we've tried to cover this issue on the Hudson Mohawk magazine, and it's been really difficult to explain. So I think that folks that are making up their minds that they, you know, support it or oppose it, they may not be operating from the same set of facts.
Yeah, I mean, Corinne, the way I try and explain it, when I'm at someone's door talking to, like when I was out campaigning and this issue came up quite a bit, I start by just comparing it to our water usage. And how water usage, there's a base fee that we all pay into because the water system, we're all benefiting from it in some way, you know, water and sewer. And so we all pay some base amount, but then we pay based on usage. If you conserve water and you don't use a lot of it, you shouldn't have to pay as much as someone that's using a lot of water. And it's a very similar concept to, you know, when you bring that over to garbage. If a household is being careful and separating out their food waste and composting that. And we, by the way, we're rolling out a composting program called Food Scraps 360. Actually, it's not called, the company is Food Scraps 360. The program is called From the Ground Up. And this is our first ever composting program, but we're offering that to residents now. We've got excellent recycling going on. So there's almost no excuse for not reducing our waste stream. And it's the same thing. Like if you want to pay less, then just produce less garbage. Get more of it into recycling, get more of it into composting, and we'll all be saving money. It's actually a good thing for the city. And I don't know, I think it's a simple explanation, but maybe the messaging has not been great. I know that the bag method that was originally proposed, where you'd buy bags, had a lot of pushback from landlords who thought, you know, my tenants may not be able to afford this. And that's a very reasonable concern. And, you know, I put forth a couple other options like barcoding your trash cans and then just paying for each time that the trash can is tipped into the garbage truck. So you don't have to go out and buy bags. You just continue doing what you were doing and just put your garbage can out when it's full. And the slower you fill your garbage can, the less you'll end up paying.
It's ironic though, right? I mean, people want everything for free. They think they should be able to throw out whatever they want for free, and yet they don't want to pay for city services.
Yeah, I mean, this is where, and again, I know there was a lot of pushback about the garbage fee, and I know the Republican majority, they are definitely going to be talking about that next year. We've always opposed it. It's actually, by the way, I'll just mention, it was a Republican majority that passed the garbage fee back in 2016. But they're staunchly opposed to it now. But the point was that we're trying to let citizens understand the cost of disposing of garbage, and landfills are filling up. It's not going to get cheaper. It's only going to get more and more expensive. So we need to start now on reducing our waste stream. I mean, I don't know if we're in a dire situation yet, but it's just going to get more and more expensive. And what are we going to do with all this garbage?
So you mentioned that Troy City Council will flip to Republican control on January 1st. And I want to ask you, how did that happen?
Well, first of all, this election, the November 2021 election had, in my opinion, horrible turnout, especially Democratic turnout. If you look at 4 years ago, the equivalent election, which would have been county executive, county legislature, and city council, in 2017, there were about 8,200 ballots cast. And in this election, there were about 7,700 ballots cast. So you're talking about a drop of 500 ballots when there were so many efforts underway to increase voter turnout. I mean, the League of Women Voters had the Troy Bot campaign, which is, you know, activate your vote and get out and vote. You know, you had billboards up encouraging people to vote. Certainly there was more public awareness about the election than I've seen probably in any other election locally. And yet we had a pretty extreme drop in turnout. And that's really troubling to me. I'm not exactly sure what accounts for that. I don't know if it's Republican messaging at the national level that elections are just all fraudulent. Why even bother voting? And, you know, all the stop the steal and the lies about the election. I don't know if that's having an impact locally. I don't know if it's potentially that the Democratic Party itself during this election was clearly split. I'm sure you know that. We've talked about it before. Did that just cause people just to get turned off and not want to come out and vote? I don't know what the reasons were for that, but there was definitely a drop off in turnout. And that was really, really unfortunate. And then, you know, we had District 6. It comes down to District 6 again. And, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. Back in 2015, I was on the other side of that. You know, we had a bunch of Working Families Party candidates that we were supporting, and I was on board with those candidates. And what happened? We ended up losing the council, because the lesson learned there is that you cannot win on the Working Families line alone in the city of Troy. It has never happened. It probably will never happen. So, you know, what I would call the Marquita effect was destined to fail. You know, Marquita was never going to win. And unfortunately, she stayed in the race, and that flipped that seat. And flipping that seat flipped the entire council. And flipping the council, by the way, also will affect redistricting, which is an issue that it's an issue that's very important to me. And I should mention that we did pass legislation to create the Independent Redistricting Commission a couple weeks ago as one of our last pieces of legislation on the way out, because we wanted to make sure that, you know, I think in general, Democrats believe in independent redistricting more than Republicans. Across the nation, it seems like Republicans engage in the gerrymandering more than Democrats do. So, I'm very happy that we were able to push that forward. But bottom line is, you know, with the election, it's very unfortunate that Marquita stayed in the race. She had a lot of volunteers that I think if I was working strategy for her campaign or Dee Collins' campaign, for example, or Steve Figueroa's campaign in District 2, I would have taken all those volunteers and put them up into D1 and D2 and tried to pick up a seat rather than potentially lose a seat. So I just think it was a very poor strategy, but, you know, everyone has a right to run. She had a right to stay in the race. I think she ended up with 143 votes in the primary and 151 votes in the general. So basically she campaigned all fall to pick up an additional 8 votes. So that's really unfortunate.
Well, we're talking about Marquita Edwards, but it's not just one woman. It's not just Marquita. And as you say, Marquita had a right to run. She has a lot of great attributes.
Absolutely.
I hope she has a future in politics. But since it's not just Marquita, it's really a phenomenon. What do you say to people who say the reason we need to run third party candidates, whether it's the Working Families Party or Democratic Socialists or whatever, is because the Democratic Party has let us down time and time again. And if you just keep telling us to wait, this is what's dooming us. It's what's dooming the environment and criminal justice and voting rights. What do you say to people who truly believe that?
I mean, I would say that the Democratic Party, I don't think the Democratic Party is letting people down. I mean, the Democratic Party is what any of us make of it. I would certainly say that if it's between a Democrat and a Republican based on issues in general, I'm always going to select the Democrat. I mean, for the issues that I hold dear to me. And I think that most Democrats and Democratic Socialists and Working Families candidates all hold dear to them. I think we agree on so many of the issues, like probably 90%+ of issues we would all agree on. It doesn't make sense to combat each other. There's got to be give and take. The Democratic Party absolutely has to be open to newer candidates, to young candidates, to African-American candidates, to LGBT candidates. You know, happily they were with me. But yes, the Democratic Party is a big tent party. And, you know, being a big tent party means that there's going to be conflict over issues. No one is ever going to get everything that they want. There's no perfect candidate. But, you know, the slate of candidates that the Democratic Party had for the city council in Troy, I think it was probably the most diverse slate we've ever had, with, you know, Dee Collins in one and Steve Figueroa in two. You had, you know, multiple female candidates. You know, Cheryl Kennedy was a highly, highly credentialed and qualified candidate. And Marquita was a great candidate as well. But once you, the issue, Corinne, is I think is less about the Democratic Party itself, because the Democratic Party, I think, put forth a really strong slate of candidates.
Did they support them? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but, you know, some people are looking at the Democratic Party, particularly here in Rensselaer County, maybe even in the Capital Region, maybe even in New York, and saying, A, they're not doing enough to support these candidates like D. Colin and Steve Figueroa. But also, yep. You know, there's something, there are some people that think there's something rotten in the party. What do you say to those folks?
Well, about the support. Yeah, I think the party could have done more for candidates, especially first-time candidates. I had a bunch of conversations with Steve, and you know, he was really just, you know, trying to learn as he was going. And we should have some type of, you know, candidate boot camp. The Democratic Party should, you know, be able to guide candidates through the petitioning process and through canvassing and fundraising. I know he had help. I mean, he had people from the Democratic Party that were advising him for sure. But can we do more? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the problem was, you know, we were stretched so thin and we were battling each again, you know, going back to 2015 as a comparative, we were battling each other, spending so much time and money doing that we couldn't support each other as we normally would. And that has to change. You know, we've got to find a way to come together. And that means, you know, all different aspects, all different corners of the Democratic Party have to come together, because the Republicans, you know, their motto was Team Troy United. And I'm sure that they have differences, right? But they didn't show it. They just went out as a unified team and campaigned. And, you know, with the county legislature races, they came pretty close. They came close to knocking Peter Grimm off of the legislature. And he's the minority leader right now. That's got to raise alarms. And that means that, you know, when we are fractured, we do not do well. Overall, Democrats, in my opinion, did not do well across the county. But even in Troy, you know, a fractured party is not helpful. That also doesn't mean that these other organizations like the WFP can come in and just tell the Democratic Party how it should be run, right? There's got to be give and take on both sides. People have to come together and work through issues. And not every Democrat is going to be a perfect WFP candidate. And not every WFP candidate is going to, you know, check all the boxes on the Democratic Party. But, you know, we've got to accept that our minor differences in order for, you know, to achieve the greater good.
With this incoming Republican majority in the Troy City Council, a lot of the initiatives, the decisions that our listening audience care about are going to be at issue. What advice would you give our listeners about how to stay attuned to the coming decisions and how best to raise their voices?
Yeah, without question, attending city council meetings, and if they go back to in person, showing up to the meetings would be a wonderful thing. I certainly, even though I'm not going to be on the council anymore, as a resident of Troy, you know, I plan to stay involved and make my voice heard. I would tell people to follow what's going on, to comment, to email your city council representatives. But really, you know, because we suffered some losses in our elections, this is not a time to check out. It's a time to actually gear ourselves up even more so, and hold this new council accountable and make sure that they are reflecting the will of the people. Because in my opinion, right now, a Republican majority doesn't reflect the Democratic majority of voters in the city of Troy, right? That's kind of an anomaly. And it happens again when there's a split vote in a district, which is unfortunate. But the best way to combat that is to make sure that your elected officials know that you're watching them and that you're holding them accountable.
You're going to be entering a legislature in the minority. What's your strategy for being an effective minority member of the Rensselaer County Legislature?
Yeah, that's a great question, Corinne. For my 10 years on the council, I have always been in the majority. And, you know, when you're in the majority, it's actually tough, because you have to control the agenda. You know, you have to draft an agenda. You have to gather the votes to move your agenda forward. You know, when you're in the minority, you get to chirp a lot. And, you know, we've certainly had that from the Republicans, which is interesting, because now that the Republicans, you know, going back to the council, now that the Republicans are taking it over, they're going to have to govern, right? They can't just complain. They have to govern in some way. But yeah, the county legislature, unfortunately, the Democrats are in a super minority. Yeah, the best I can do is to be a voice. You know, I will do what I can to work with Republicans. If there's legislation that I think is important, whether it has to do with, you know, the 911, you know, right now 911, we're having issues with that, and the city of Troy pays into that quite a bit. And I feel like we're not getting the service. I know that there's a bunch of, you know, radios that that were issued to, you know, to our police and fire that are not even functioning correctly. And they're, I think they're barely using them. They, you know, that's something I can certainly lend my voice to. But if I can work with Republicans to pass legislation to fix issues like that, you know, we've got contaminated water sources in Postenkill and in Hoosick Falls. Major, major issue. Republicans have been fairly quiet on it. You know, we as Democrats have to be loud. You know, we've got to be a voice for the people whose health depends on having a quality drinking water. And if there's some way I can pass legislation to, you know, to move that forward, I'll do that. It's an interesting situation to be in because you, when you're in the minority, you really have to hold the majority accountable. And that typically means, you know, using your voice, issuing press releases, et cetera. But also, if you're really serious about affecting change, the way you affect change is through legislation. I mean, let's be honest, right? The passing laws is what actually makes change. And to do that in a minority, you have to bring majority members on board with, you know, with your policy objectives. And that requires working across the aisle. I guess it's a really interesting balancing act, right? Because you want to hold them accountable, but you also have to work with the opposing party if you actually want to affect change. Yeah, this will be new for me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Well, I wish you all the luck with that in the new year. And I'm sure that your constituents will be watching closely to see how you accomplish that balancing act.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I wish you a happy and peaceful end of the year.
Thank you, Corinne. Same to you. And thanks for giving me some time to talk.